Welcome to The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis. I am your host, Cicely Davis.
We are 6 months away from the most consequential election in the history of our country. Now, I know that's been said before. You've heard it before. Maybe you even said it yourself, but I think it's not hyperbole. It's not. That feels savagely truthful right now as we look at the state of our country. Our traditions are being erased, diminished, actually. Our history slandered, our infrastructure vandalized, or in our amendments ignored. We are in serious times, folks. Scary times. More than challenged. We are indeed in a spiritual battle, and we need to show up and ensure that we win. Hello, America, and welcome back to another episode of The Savage Truth. I'm Cicely, and appreciate you tuning in. Hope you all had a great Mother's Day out there. Hope yours, I don't know if yours matched mine. Mine was the best ever. I love being a mommy. Thank you, ladies who are mothers, having birthed the world. You absolutely deserved a great day. As always, please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And let's get it. Now, I have some disturbing and bad news to start out with. I hate to start you out this way, but I have to, you know, it's my job to let you know what's going on, and especially in my state. Ilhan Omar won the endorsement of the DFL party in her reelection bid for Minnesota's 5th Congressional District in a first-round ballot bout. The backing unlocks resources from the state party ahead of the August primary race. She won the endorsement over former Minneapolis City Councilmember Don Samuels, whom she defeated by just two percentage points in 2022. During a question and answer portion of the convention, Omar was asked about the war in Gaza, which she referred to, as no surprise, as genocide. Now, as you know, you all know, I live here in Minnesota's 5th Congressional District. I opposed her in the last election. I want you to get a glimpse of Minnesota's 5th District and how crazy it is, how the people are absolutely insane. But I want you to truly understand the thinking of the 5th that dominates the district. So she's asked the question about the war in Gaza, and this was her response, and I quote, "There is no way for us as citizens of this country to continue to allow our tax dollars to pay for the bombs that are destroying a civilian population." And to that, unfortunately and disgustingly, she received loud cheers and jeers from the audience. Republican Congressman Don Bacon of Nebraska introduced a resolution to censor Omar for referring to some Jewish university students as pro-genocide. Samuel says he plans to stay in the race in the strongly Democratic district, Minnesota 5, in which I live in the heart of Minneapolis, as you know. Some things to note here. While Samuel argues that Omar's rhetoric is too divisive for the district, he calls the censure motion for Representative Bacon simply politics. Simply politics. In response to the same question, Samuels called for a war. He called for the war a quote unquote fraught and very complex situation. It's not that complex. Okay, let's get that clear. This isn't complex. This is anti-Semitism. It is anti-Israel and it's anti-Jewish people. Period. The end. Having a district where there are so many Jews and so many Muslims, as I'm quoting him, instead of becoming a convener for conversations where the risks are all much lower and the tensions lower in the Middle East itself, she has picked a side. And I say to that, well, at least she has picked a side. It's disgusting and it's disturbing, but at least she has picked a side. So this response from Don Samuels is only letting you know that his plans is to go to D.C. and become yet another average politician, not really answering the question, trying to remain gray on the issue. But again, I tell you, this is a line in the sand. It's a big period. Okay, this is anti-Semitism. It is anti-Israel and it's anti-Jewish people. And it's absolutely disgusting. And it cannot be welcome. Both Samuels and Omar gave speeches with supporters on stage at South High School in Minneapolis. Samuels received 85 votes and Omar picked up 133 votes on the very first round. So this was short, quick, and to the point. They're making a point there in the fifth, you guys. They're letting you know we are pro-Ilhan. Makes you want to vomit. Okay. Samuels vows to stay in the race, which will be a closely watched Democratic primary race across the country, as it was last time. In the end, neither is good for the fifth. But that is the hub. It's the birthplace. Remind you, Minnesota's 5th Congressional District, which is Minneapolis and 14 other western suburbs beyond. It's the birthplace. It's the hub. It's ground zero for defund the police movement. So go figure, you know, it's not to be surprising. I know that all of you who are watching and listening probably say, Cicely, get the heck out of there. Believe me, I'm working on it. I'll keep you posted. Moving on. Now, I'm not much of a drinker, okay? I'm not one to drink, not a whole lot. Those who are close to me, you know this. And I'm also a lightweight. But apparently in San Francisco, if you're an alcoholic struggling with the use of alcohol, San Francisco has come up with a remedy. Vodka shots. Vodka on the house. Yes. Yes, you heard me right. San Francisco health officials say a program that provides alcohol to homeless alcoholics prevents the city's most vulnerable from using emergency services. Yes, you heard me right. But I will repeat it. Okay. The city of San Francisco is providing free beer. The city of San Francisco is providing free beer and vodka shots to homeless alcoholics at taxpayers' expense under a little-known pilot program. Now, get this. The managed alcohol program operated by San Francisco's Department of Public Health serves regimented doses of alcohol to voluntary participants with alcohol addiction in an effort to keep the homeless off the streets and relieve the city's emergency services. Experts say the program can save or extend lives, but critics wonder if the government would be better off funding treatment and sobriety programs instead. Really? You ask that? That's what experts are asking? Okay. When I say, and you say, because you agree with me, and somehow others don't see, I don't know how, that we need to vote this progressive way of thinking and operating and legislating out of in November, this is an perfect example as to what I'm talking about, okay? So apparently this program was established in countries such as Canada and Australia. Canada, that should be a warning right there, okay? If it's successful under Trudeau, we shouldn't want it. Australia is a continent, by the way. But supposedly, the California Healthcare Foundation explained the program in 2020 when they first introduced it as a pilot, as a managed alcohol program. Now, usually administered by a nurse and trained support staff in a facility such as homeless shelter or a transitional or permanent home, and is one method, as they say, to minimize harm for those with alcohol use disorder. Now, again, this is also for voluntary participants. Now, Rick, I have a question for you.
Yep.
If I'm addicted to alcohol and you were running the program that was giving out shots, how much convincing do you think you would have to get me to be a willing participant? Yeah, this is the opposite side, folks. This is the thinking. I can't decide sometimes if this is deliberate and they're just that evil or if they're just that dumb. Like, I go back and forth. And honestly, I'm straddling the fence. And you know, I'm not someone to straddle the fence, but I can't decide sometimes because some of this stuff, you can't make this stuff up. I mean, is this for real? Listen to what one of the spokespersons of this program said. And I quote, "By prescribing limited quantities of alcohol, the model aims to prevent potentially life-threatening effects of alcohol withdrawal, such as seizures and injuries." Okay, so my question is, where's the crack program? Okay, Rick is loving this today. Where's the meth program? Start a program with a bunch of nurses handing out rocks, okay, an 8-ball, a bunch of nurses handing out pipes for meth and cooking it for them. I mean, this is where we are today, folks. Seriously, I mean, we're laughing, but the truth is this is sad. This is scary. And this is where we're headed if we don't make the right decision come November and vote right and actually get beyond personalities. And so we can get this country back on the right train here. This is donkey land and laws. This is how they solve problems, how they resolve social and health issues. This is how they think to resolve. Okay. So let me get back into it so I don't get carried away. You know how I get. I got to finish this thing. So the San Francisco Managed Alcohol Program, or MAP as referred to, was established during the COVID-19 pandemic to prevent vulnerable homeless people who were placed in isolation and hotel rooms from suffering from alcohol withdrawal. But the program, which started with 10 beds, has since been expanded into a 20-bed program that operates out of a former hotel in Tenderloin with a $5 million annual budget, as reported by San Francisco Crown. 20 beds cost $20 million? What kind of bed is that? Okay, so let's not take that same $5 million. Can we do this? Why can't we take that same $5 million, 20 beds, and nurses to foster sobriety through the proven methods of nurse-observed withdrawal? Let's actually give them, in smaller doses, the very thing that they're addicted to. This is crazy. So here's another question, Rick, because, you know, I'm just curious. If I'm an alcoholic and I'm in this program getting nurses to give me what I'm addicted to, okay? So I'm an alcoholic, Rick.
Gotcha.
I come to you.
What?
You run the program. You actually give me what I'm actually addicted to. What's my incentive to actually graduate the program?
Zero.
Okay, just curious. Typically, someone writes in the comments if my thinking is off here. Okay, write in the comments if I'm off. But usually, someone enters into a program like this, ideally voluntarily, understanding or deciding, hey, this drug or this alcohol or this substance has got an unhealthy hold over me. And I am powerless against it, and I need some help to overcome it, right? That's the ideal situation. A person volunteering themselves into a program because they want to help to overcome the addiction. And hopefully, depending on the sophistication of the program, learn their triggers and why they use, thereby strengthening and increasing their probability, if not only kicking the habit altogether, and remaining sober. So the whole point of after sobriety is control. Then there's the not so idyllic way, right? Interventions or being forced into a program, either by friends or family and loved ones or by court order, something like that. But either way, withdrawal is the medical procedure used to dry out the addict's dependency, to starve the body of the substance under a nurse's surveillance, eventually getting the person back to health, dependent into a healthy, dependent-free state. Not feeding the body the harmful substance that it craves to its detriment, sometimes even to the demise of the addict. What I'm saying is this, folks, the same $5 million could go to keep doing that. It's a proven, highly successful method of sobriety, been done over and over and over and over and over and over again. But Rick, you're going to love this because they actually admit that this actually keeps the addicts addicted. Yeah, listen to this. Alice Mugaman, the nurse manager of this MAP program in San Francisco, explained in an October presentation that nurses provide clients with a motel room, 3 meals a day, and enough alcohol to meet their addictive needs, but keeping someone at a safe level of intoxication. What? Somebody please tell me what a safe level of intoxication is. Somebody please. I'm talking actually intoxicated, not just alcohol in your system, because like here in Minnesota, anything under 0.08 is considered not an offense. But the key word here is intoxication. What's a safe level? But here's the scheme down the line on this thing. You see, when the communists, okay, when they have anything to do with anything, you have to understand that most things need to be probed and questioned, right? There's a long run plan at the end of this thing. It's most of the time a smokescreen. So per this program, initial success in stabilizing alcoholic patients prompted health officials to expand the pilot into a long-term program with 10 beds earmarked for the Latinx and indigenous population. And you know, Latinos and Hispanic people hated that term, Latinx, right? They just hated it. While 12 additional beds are supported at the city's traditional sobering center. So who's crossing the border, right? Hispanics, especially from the South. Let me finish this, okay? Let me take this home. Bryce Bridge, a social worker involved with the program, said during the presentation that once a client is identified as having alcohol abuse problems and admitted, they are assessed to determine individual needs. Clients are connected to a primary care doctor, provided resources to secure government identification if they lack Social Security cards or any other documents, and assisted with psychiatric care, wellness activities on site, and other evidence-based treatments. Oh, so they get vodka and beer shots, a primary care doctor, they get government IDs. Oh, so now they have an ID. So they can do what now? Vote. So this Bryce guy continues. We actually, and I quote, we actually connect them to different community-based organizations that assist us with conducting art groups and poetry groups and just kind of help them explore ways that they can express themselves. Bridge also said marijuana use is fairly common in our sites and said there is no policy prohibiting marijuana consumption. No surprise there. Though health providers monitor the activity to prevent ill health effects of interpersonal conflicts. Now, while relatively unknown until now, the program is under fresh scrutiny under Adam Nathan, CEO of an AI company and chair of the Salvation Army in San Francisco. He made several social media posts criticizing what he witnessed at the location. And I quote him, listen to this, guys, because he's telling us what's going on there because he actually visited, okay? Inside the lobby, they had kegs set up on taps where they were basically giving out free beer to the homeless who've been identified with AUD, alcohol use disorder. Nathan wrote on X after visiting the hotel in Tenderloin where homeless alcoholics were served. He goes on to say, it's set up so people in the program just walk in and grab a beer and then another one. And this literally continues without stop for the rest of the day. But Canada, as I said, you guys, is no model for the U.S. Anything that Trudeau picks up, we should absolutely be putting down, especially a sobriety program. Millions of dollars, okay? Millions of dollars wasted or stolen, supposedly to help and house the homeless. But what do we have instead? We have more tent encampments and human feces on the streets there in San Francisco. We have more crime, more prostitution, and sex trafficking. Millions of dollars wasted or stolen for a sobriety program, which I believe to be a covert operation to provide IDs for illegals. But this is what I refer to, folks. This is what I've been talking about. This is how the Democrat Party solves issues. Waste your money, endanger you, create ridiculous lost cause programs and give health care to illegals and give them identification and debit cards and housing and on and on and on. This is what is at stake in November. Let me be very clear before I move on, especially if you're a Democrat watching or listening to this, or not necessarily on our side of the aisle, or you're one of those, I don't want to vote for either candidate. I don't like Biden or Trump. I think a third party needs to get in there, okay? A third party candidate won't get through. Not gonna happen. Trump is the candidate to get this country not only back on track, but thriving and secured for the future. And Biden means more, absolutely. Means more alcoholics and other substance addicts, more widespread poverty, particularly as per those who unfortunately fall below the average earning line. But also a warning to the middle class. More encampments, more feces, more crime, more illegals coming to your neighborhood near you very soon, more communists, more communism, more attacks on free speech, your everyday liberties that you take for granted more failure at the border, and more attacks from our enemies. More of less. Less for the American people. Get your head on straight and vote this coming November for Donald Trump. Get over this personality and this vote for your wallets. This is what you need to do. Get over his personality and vote for your wallet. Vote for your kids. Vote for your faith and your future to exist as free. Now, I'm moving on. Michael Cohen testifies about Trump's 2011 presidential run consideration today as we begin. Now, this gas bag, a liar, not a Sabbath truther, an actual convicted perjurer on the stand. Let me make some points because this needs focus. The longer the case goes on, the higher Trump's approval numbers go. Everyone recognizes, both Democrats and Republicans, that this is purely political. It's a circus that only stands to increase beyond repair Joe Biden's unpopularity and Trump's presumptive win in November. But listen to this, and just so I can make my point, right? The longer he's on trial, the more he wins. Maybe his campaign trial should be run on court. You know what? Maybe Trump should just change his whole strategy to just stay in court, because the longer he sticks in court, the more money he raises, the more packed his rallies become, the more popular and more favor he gains with the American people. Joe did it from the basement in 2020, so why can't Trump do it? So according to polling, if you're at 50%, you're kind of taken off as a winning state, right? Once you hit 50%, that's a state you won. Let me read these numbers to you guys so you can understand what I'm talking about. Arizona has Biden right now at 42%, Trump at 49%. Georgia has Biden at 39%, Trump 49%. Michigan, Biden 42%, Trump 49%. Nevada, Biden 38%, Trump 50%. Pennsylvania has Biden at 44%, Trump 47%. Wisconsin, okay, has Biden at 47%, Trump 45%. The surveys released Monday by New York Times, Siena College, and the Philadelphia Inquirer suggest that discontent over the economy and the Israeli-Hamas war in Gaza and a deterioration in support for Biden by younger Black and Hispanic voters threaten to unravel the president's Democratic coalition. So these Get Trump follies are working in his favor. And the Dems are starting to notice. Again, sometimes they take that race off the board altogether when it hits 50%. Now, political strategists are skeptical of polls, especially this early in the election. I totally get that. But what you can trust is the movement. And those numbers have been moving in his direction, Donald Trump, the longer they do this to him. And if you watch the rally in New Jersey this past weekend, a state that is deep blue and surrounded by blue states, as deep as blue as you can possibly get. And Donald Trump has a rally of 100,000 happy, enthusiastic supporters. People camped out overnight to be there. That set off shockwaves in politics. Democrats were freaking out more than they have ever before. A rally with 100,000 people is big. Yes, absolutely. Now, Obama had some big rallies, I can admit that, but not 8 years afterwards. It's been 8 years since Donald Trump was first elected. This means and shows this, that he has staying power. He fills an arena like a rock star. So he has filling power, okay? He has rock star power. He is the next level when it comes to politics, and Democrats are terrified of it. And they're terrified of him. They are terrified of facing him in an election, and they are terrified of his influence, and they have no issues to point to or to claim on their own, right? Everything that Joe Biden has touched has absolutely failed disastrously, to the point that he has absolutely no successes to speak of, especially since the last 4 years, rendering them with no other choice but to continue with these ridiculous antics, which ultimately round out the circle, right? So I'm back at the top of the circle, proving Trump's star power and the people's embrace of him and his policies. And let me say this quick about this trial in New York before I move on. People who are not fans of Donald Trump should be looking at this trial and saying to themselves, this scares me. Because if they can do this to him, they can and they will do it to me or my husband or my wife or my sister, my brother. You get the point. Anybody. We have to put a stop to this. And lastly, about this Judge Mershon, I wouldn't be surprised if someone in the Trump camp team, maybe someone doesn't file complaints with the Committee on Judicial Conduct, complaining about the fact that he should have recused himself, complain about how he has handled himself. And if that is happening, hopefully this judge will get a knock on his door or a notice, an investigation to get out and on the way to the appellate level if we actually get there. Because if you've noticed, the judge has kind of tempered himself, and we're all kind of noticing that. He knows his behavior has been, at the very least, questionable and outside of the law. And now, all of a sudden, he directs Michael Cohen to zip it on Trump, especially his attacks and disparaging comments on TikTok videos. But I say, too little, too late. Although the Trump team calls this a win, and I agree. The objective is clear here, folks. To keep Trump in court, off the campaign trail, where he can't have rallies in New Jersey of 100,000 people or run off after court to the heart of Harlem and get praised by people in the streets. If your star witness lied under oath, if your star witness is a convicted perjurer, a convicted liar, spent years in jail, I submit that this is not a case at all. This is not about trying to prove his guilt. They are trying to stop his win on November 5th. Here's the savage truth. This two-tier justice system continues to scare and frustrate America and is another reason why we continue to see Trump rising in the polls, because at the heart of America and Americans, we believe that Lady Justice should wear and must wear a blindfold and not consider race or status or religion or fame or education, that our justice system will serve the American idea to the highest. Young Black and Hispanic voters continue to unravel the Biden coalition for the Democrat Party, and I, for one, am enjoying watching it. There has never been a better, more opportune time to win Black voters back. We haven't done this since 1964, when more Republicans voted for the Civil Rights Bill than Democrats, a fact that they hate to acknowledge. And I want to end this short episode. It wasn't very short. Sorry. Don't laugh at me, Rick. I want to end this episode on a savage truth that is so very encouraging to me personally. 20% of the Black vote goes to Donald Trump. There is no Democratic Party. We don't need 30%. We don't need 40 or 60, right? 20% decimates the Democrat Party, and we will have control of the House and the Senate and 4 more years of low interest rates, low inflation, lowering the crime, low unemployment, but high enthusiasm for business and market capitalism and the middle class, as well as a president who stands loyal to our allies and lethal to our adversaries. I've talked extensively of contrasts and comparisons. Trump's contrast to Biden is blinding. It could not be better for the working class. Blacks, Hispanics, Asians, whites, and all others had more money in their pockets than they did 4 years ago. This would actually unify the country, an agenda the communist Marxist socialists want to dismantle. Americans had enthusiasm for their future during the Trump presidency, and unfortunately, it took a 4-year bout with Joe and Kamala, Kiki, to see that. But I welcome back the Black vote home. Welcome back. Come on home. To its original party. And I believe we can keep it. That unification can truly lead to healing in our country when you have an American first president who understands that the best revenge is success, freedom, and prosperity. All aboard on the Trump train, coming to a town near you. Don't miss it. Please like, share, subscribe, and leave a positive review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. And remember, you know the mantra, be bold, be strong, be faithful, be true.
Till next time.
I'm Cicely.
The Savage Truth with Cicely Davis is a production of Front Page Magazine and the David Horowitz Freedom Center. Reproduction of this podcast without express written consent is prohibited.